And it's related to these parshas in general, but it is a very specific topic. And the reason why I find it fascinating is because when I ask people this question, most people usually have the same answer, and it's probably something which you may have learned once upon a time in preschool or in day school, or whatever it was. It centers around a midrashic, or it's really a Talmudic story, which I guess is fascinating in its own way. And then we stop there, we accept it as is, and we never look past it to try to find another alternative. And that is the question of, when did Esav die? Anybody want to give me the answer you probably heard a long time ago? Or maybe you never heard? Okay. Well, if you never heard it, then you wouldn't know. Okay, but if you has anybody ever heard such a question being addressed? No? Nobody? Fine.
He never died.
Ah, he never died. I heard a great line that Rabbi Eddie Davis, who's a rabbi in the Young Israel Hollywood, he's an American history buff. So one time he was talking about how Stonewall Jackson, the general of the Confederate side in the Civil War, so he was I believe he may have even been shot by his own men. But no matter how you look at it, because medicine at the time was not well known, they say that had penicillin been around, that he would have survived. And Rabbi Davis adds, and he'd still be alive today. So the question is regarding Esav. Well, if you never heard it, then it's going to be a totally new idea for you. You look like you want to say something. Nothing? Okay. I don't want to put you on the spot. Okay. At Yaakov's funeral. Oh, see, thank you. One honest person here. There we go. I'm just kidding. Everybody's honest. Very nice. Okay, at Yaakov's funeral. Do you remember the story? Okay, no problem. If you don't remember the story, that's okay. Okay, let us first take a look. And I'm going to show you the Gemara in a second that addresses this question. And after I show you the Gemara, I'll explain to you why this topic fascinates me and why I think it's important to go through the entire topic and not just the first story, which is more well known. If you were to ask, if you have grandchildren, and I imagine most people here do, if you have grandchildren, ask them, if they go to yeshiva, ask them, when did Esav die? And they will tell you the Gemara, which we're going to do first. Okay? That's your homework. You don't have to report back to me, but that's your homework. Okay, the first thing to note is where it says Esav's last appearance in Chumash. So this is towards the very end of last week's Parsha, Vayishlach. The Torah tells us, Vayigva Yitzchak, Yitzchak died, Vayyamas, Gvia and Misa are two different terms referring to death, which is a topic of a different discussion. I'm not going to get into it now. Vayasev Elamav, and he was gathered to his nation. These are all euphemisms for death. Zakenu Sivayamim, he was old and satisfied with his days. Vayikburuoso Esav Yaakovinav. Esav and Yaakov, his sons, buried him. That's the last time we see Esav live and in person. The next, right after this, you have chapter 36, Perek Lamed Vav, which tells us the generations of Esav, Esav's wives, his children, his grandchildren, and also the family of Seir, who was, I guess you could say, an ally of Esav, and there was a little bit of intermixing between the families. Esav moved to the land of Seir, so they're linked together. Okay. That's the last time we hear about Esav in the Torah. This pasuk, when he buries his father, is the live appearance, and the rest is just his family tree, which is irrelevant to his life or death. It could be after his death, it could be while he's still alive. For our purposes at this point, it's not important. Okay, so now we go on to the Gemara. Number 2 and number 3. Now number 2 is the Gemara in Sota, page Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, 13a, where the Gemara tells us an interesting tale. The background of the Gemara, I didn't give the entire thing, but the background is that Yaakov dies in Egypt. And after Yaakov dies in Egypt, he has had his son Yosef promise to bring him back to Hebron, to Me'aras HaMachpelah, to the cave of Machpelah, which is their their ancestral burial plot. Not that far back. It's Avram was the first, but that's their ancestral burial plot. And Yaakov is going to be buried there. So, after the mourning period ends in Egypt, they bring Yaakov up to the land of Canaan, into Hebron, and they are about ready to bury him. When who shows up, the Gemara says? Esav. Esav says, what's going on? And they say, well, we're here to bury Yaakov. And Esav says, no, you're not. Our father gave us as an inheritance two plots in this cave. Yaakov used one to bury his wife Leah, and the other one belongs to me. And they say, no, it's not true. Yaakov was given the whole thing. You got nothing. Or, when you sold your birthright, Yaakov got your portion as well. So you have nothing. So that's where our Gemara begins. Amar Lahu, Esav says to them, Havli Igrisa. He says, bring me the deed. Prove to me that you own the plot. Amar Le, they said to him, Igrisa ba'arad mitraimi. The deed is in the land of Egypt. Uman Nizel, who's going to go get it? Nezel Naphtali. Naphtali's going to go. The Khalil Kia Yalta, because Naphtali is compared to a deer that's in the blessings that Yaakov gives at the end of his life. He compares Naphtali to a deer. Naphtali Ayala Shalucha, a deer is swift, he'll run. Okay? Dechsev, Naphtali Ayala Shalucha, no saying Imre Shefer. Amrabi Abo, Al Tikre Imre Shefer, Ela Imre Sefer. So it has a teaching about what it is that Naphtali teaches. Okay? In any case, Naphtali goes. Meanwhile, Naphtali's gone, and they're all sitting there waiting, because Esav's saying, over my dead body, you're not getting in here, and they're literally waiting to bury Yaakov, because Esav's not letting him go in. Chushim berei Dedan. Chushim, the son of Dan, Taman Hava Vikaran Leodne. He was there, and he was a little hard of hearing, the Gemara tells us. Amar Lahu, he says to them, what's going on? My high. What's going on here? But Amar Le, and they said to him, this guy, pointing at Esav, he's delaying the burial until Naphtali returns from Egypt with the deed to allow Yaakov to be buried here. Amar Lahu, Chushim, the son of Dan, says, Ve'adasi Naphtali me'arad mitrayim, yehe avi abba mutal bebizayim, and until my uncle Naphtali shows up, my grandfather Yaakov is going to be laying here in state? That's an embarrassment. We don't have somebody lay in state. We've got to bury him. Shakal kufa mechaye areshe. He took his stick of some kind and he batted Esav against the head, and Esav died. Natran enev nafla kar de Yaakov. His eyes closed and he fell alongside Yaakov. Paschinu Yaakov enev yachich. And then the Gemara tells us that Yaakov opened his eyes and saw his brother. What exactly that means is odd, because of course Yaakov was dead. And the Gemara concludes and says, if you skip to the third to last line, full line that is, Be'osa Sha'a, at that moment, Niskaima Nebuasa Shel Rivka. Rivka's prophecy was fulfilled. Dechsev, as it says, Lama Eshkal Gam Shnechem Yom Echad, when Rivka had sent Yaakov away to go to Lavan, in order to marry one of Lavan's daughters, Rivka did it because she found out that Esav was planning to kill his brother Yaakov. And she said, why should I lose both of you on the same day? To which Rashi says, Rivka had a prophecy that Yaakov and Esav would die on the same day. And she figured, if Esav kills Yaakov, Yaakov's children would redeem Yaakov's blood and kill Esav. Or if Yaakov, in defense, killed Esav, Esav's children would kill Yaakov, that they would somehow die on the same day. So the Gemara says this completes her prophecy that Yaakov and Esav would die on the same day. What's the problem?
Yeah, but Esav...
Oh, no, what's the problem? Yaakov's been dead a long time, yeah. Right? So the Gemara says, Ba'avagav demisasan lo b'yom echad avai, even though their death was not in the same day, Their burial was on the same day. Which, by the way, is also not true. Because according to every opinion, Esav, when he died, he was buried in the land of Seir, not in Hebron. So, okay, that's one approach, the Gemara. The next midrash, I'm not going to read it inside, but I'll just tell you how it differs. And this is the part that all the kids learn at school, which is what I assumed that you knew, but I apologize. But what is it that instead of Hushim knocking Esav against the head and killing him, he took a sword and swung it at Esav's head, chopped off Esav's head, and it rolled into the cave, and they said, you'll leave it there. And the Midrash actually says that it rolled into Yitzchak's arms, that's his father, and Yitzchak started to cry over his dead son. I don't know what that means, okay? I don't understand that Midrash, but in any case, the kids love the image of Esav's head rolling in. So you ask them, what's buried in Me'aras HaMachpelah, and they'll tell you. If they're really good, they'll say Adam and Chava also. They'll say Adam and Eve. But they'll tell you, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah, and Esav's head. Okay. And I remember when I was a kid hearing that one and not understanding that it literally meant, at least according to that Midrash, Esav's head. I thought it meant like the head of Esav's army. You know, I said, Esav's head of what? And nobody explained it to me until later on I actually learned this Midrash, and then I finally understood what he was talking about. But in any case, so there you have it. That's the Midrash. The kids love it. And that's the one that all the kids learn. But the problem is that it doesn't follow. Okay? Why? First of all, I showed you the problem I mentioned the problem with the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rivka had prophesied, why should I lose both of you on the same day? To which Rashi says that means that Yaakov and Esav would both die on the same day. Okay? And of course we know that Yaakov died much earlier in Egypt. Okay, let's bear that in mind as we look at source number 4, which starts to give us a hint to a different idea. The background to Esav's plan and the prophecy of concern regarding the day Yaakov will be killed by Esav. So after Yaakov stole Esav's blessing through tricking Yitzchak and putting on a disguise of Esav's clothing, so Pasuk Mem Aleph in number 4 says, "Vayomer Esav b'livo yikrevu yimei evel avi v'arga es Yaakov achi." Esav said, "When my father dies, I will kill my brother." The next pasuk says, "Vayugad leRivka es divrei Esav b'no agadol." Rivka was told Esav's words or Esav's thoughts. It's interesting because Esav thought these feelings in his heart, and somehow Rivka knew about it. It's from this, from other sources, that the rabbis learned that Rivka was a great prophetess, because how else would she know this? Unless she was able to read her son like a book, which I'm sure a lot of people can do here as well. Vatikra liYaakov bina. So she calls Yaakov bina katan, her younger son. Vatomer elav, she says to him, Hinei savachichem estachem lecha l'hargecha. Your brother Esav is plotting to kill you. And she says, you're going to go to my brother, you're going to stay there until I call you, ad shuv afachichem imecha, until your brother's anger subsides, he'll forget what you did to him, and I will send a message, I'll take you from there. Lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad. Why should I lose both of you on the same day? And that's the source where Rashi says that she had the prophecy that Yaakov and Esav would die on the same day. Okay, so that is just the background to the Gemara which we just saw and the Midrash which I summed up after reading the Gemara. Okay, now there are some of the commentaries in the second to last chapter of the book of Bereishis talk about Esav's role at Yaakov's funeral. We don't have to look at them all inside. Rashi number 5. You just look at the parenthesis at the end of the Rashi. You see how he quotes the Gemara from Masech Sota, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. So Rashi quotes that tale as we saw inside. Look at the Ramban, number 6. V'yitachen sheramaz lahem bi'amro v'shama kavarti asleya shekvar hechziku ba'me'ara. The Ramban says that it makes sense that Yaakov had hinted to them that he owned the deed to the cave when he said, I buried Leah there, and therefore I'm supposed to be buried too. In other words, I have two plots in the cave. V'amar zeh k'neged Esav. And he said this to them to, you know, as the antidote, so to speak, to Esav. If Esav shows up, shelo ya'arehu, bono v'kruaso, l'kon shami arasha lo ki yuha b'chor. That Esav should not have anything to say when Yaakov's funeral shows up. Esav shouldn't be able to say, hey, I own this other plot, you're not allowed to be here. Yaakov already told him, it's mine. It's mine, and I know what Esav's going to do. It's mine, don't listen to him. Esav is going to argue that he's the one who should be buried there. And even though Esav lives somewhere else, Esav should also be carried in a funeral procession to this land, even though he lives somewhere else, just like Yaakov, who is living in Egypt, is going to be carried. Esav should be carried as well after he dies. And Yaakov is concerned that if Esav is going to be buried there, then Yaakov would not be allowed to be buried there, because two families can't share the exact same plot. This also supports what Yaakov said. He said to his sons, bury me in my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan. It's waiting for me, it's not for Esav. So the Ramban is understanding that this was set up by Yaakov for himself, and it's not to be taken over by Esav under any stretch of imagination that Esav may bring in there. Okay, and the Targum Yonatan basically quotes the Midrash in Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer. The only difference is that he basically adds that Naphtali went and came back on the same day, which goes back to a different midrashic idea of what they call Kvitzas HaDerech. If Naphtali could do that, he's even better than a car. Not better than a plane, because a plane could do that, but he's better than a car, and he's certainly better than the Tasmanian devil. What?
A horse and wagon?
I don't know. Maybe a camel. But still, even a camel, I don't know. I saw the movie Lawrence of Arabia, and he crossed the Sinai Desert in 6 days. So that he was able to do, and that's in the 20th century. So... yeah, Peter O'Toole. Okay, anyway, so let's move on. Let's move on. Now, I'm going back to the problem which he had with the Gemara. The Gemara said that Rivka had insinuated that Yaakov and Esau are going to die on the same day. And I mentioned the problem. The Gemara kind of answered it, said that it means they would be buried on the same day. Let's see how it's really a problem, though, as far as their death. Source number 8. If you haven't yet, turn over your page. Vayim lo arba'im yom, after Yaakov died, they took 40 days. Ki kenim lo yimei achanukim, vayivku osam etzarim shivim yom. Took 40 days to embalm Yaakov. I don't know enough about Egyptian history and their process of embalming, but the Torah says that in order to preserve the body, in order for it to make it the journey to Hebron, where it's going to be buried, it was a 40-day process of the Egyptian mummification, if you will, and that Egypt cried for 70 days. Let's assume, at the minimum, that the embalming and the crying took place simultaneously, so we have a 70-day period. If you want, we could say embalming took place first, and then a 70-day cry, but let's assume that it was at the same time. 70 days. Okay? Only then, the Torah tells us, Vayavru yimei v'chiso, the crying ended, Vayidaber Yosef obeis Paro lemor, and now matzasi chem einechem, davru navi azne Paro lemor, the Yosef people go over to Paro, and then they first ask permission to take Yaakov up. Let's assume that took, even minimally, 1 day of diplomacy in order to allow that to take place. So we're talking 71 days. Maybe then you got to get all the preparations. And let's say Peter O'Toole is right. It takes 6 days to get across the desert. So we're talking about 6 days. Let's say about 80 days from the time of his death until they get to Hebron. Minimal. And they had a whole procession and all the people who were coming, so it could have even taken longer. So we're talking close to 3 months from the time that Yaakov died until before he's buried. Okay, that's the minimal amount of time. So for Rivka to say that they're going to die on the same day sounds to be a little ridiculous. Now the Gemara, I hate to say it, but the Gemara seems to be a cop-out. Say, oh no, it means that they're going to be buried.
That's not what Rivka said. Rivka said, why should I lose both of you? Meaning that you'll die on the same day. Now, to be fair, and this is something which is true about prophecy in general, every prophecy has a statute of limitations if it's dependent upon a certain action. Okay? For example, on Yom Kippur, at Mincha, we read the prophecy of Yonah. The prophecy of Yonah was, to the city of Nineveh, if you don't change your ways, in 40 days, your city is going to be destroyed, overturned. What happens? They change their ways, and therefore, the city is not destroyed. It's spared. Rivka says, why should I lose both of you on the same day? In other words, if it's still in my lifetime, and one of you dies because of a brotherly confrontation, right? Then the other one's going to die also. Well, Rivka's long gone. So by the time Yaakov dies, Rivka's long gone. So her prophecy, it's not that it was wrong. Meaning, had one of them killed the other, then the other one would have died on the same day. But the fact that Rivka's dead, she can't lose both of them on the same day anymore. So what is it that Rivka was referring to? And again, it's not to say that the Gemara is wrong. The Gemara is just trying to fill in a gap based on a question which the Gemara sees in plain English or in plain Hebrew with this particular contradiction. So this is where we get to there's no other way to look at this except that the Chizkuni who says it, he pulls what I call the rabbinic card, saying, I really have this great idea, but bottom line is Rashi's right. Chizkuni, take a stand and you'll see what I mean. Rashi says, Gam Shneichem, so I already told you this outside, if he comes against you and you kill him, Yamdu Banav Yargucha, and his sons will go ahead and kill you. And here's what Rashi says, Ruach HaKodesh Nizrakapa Vinisnava, so she had a divine inspiration and she had a prophecy that they would die on the same day. And he quotes the Gemara in Sota as well. Ibn Ezra says, Lama Eshkal, her fear was Pachada Shami Arog Zeezeh. She thought that they would somehow kill one another. Or Yargu in Yarog Ascha, or they'll kill you if you kill him, etc. So it's a similar idea. And some say that it means that they would die on the same day. Gam Shneichem, so the Rashbam says the same thing, that if you kill one, then the family redeemers will kill you. Let's look at the Chizkuni. He says, Lama Eshkal Gam Shneichem Yom Echad, why should I lose the both of you on the same day? Who's it referring to? Look at the first two words. Avicha V'ata. Not that I will lose you and Esav, but that I'll lose your father and you. What had Esav said? Shaharei Esav Amar. Esav had said, Yikrivu Yemei Evel Avi V'aharga Es Achi. When my father dies, I will kill my brother. Nimsa She Yitzchak Meis. That when Yitzchak died, Esav Yarog Es Yaakov, that Esav's planning to kill Yaakov, basically, at Yitzchak's funeral. And then I'll be rid of them both. The old man will be out of my hair, and Yaakov will be gone b'yom echad. I'm sorry, I apologize. That's what Esav would be thinking. But Rivka is saying, I'll have lost both of them, b'yom echad, mi-ba'ali u'mi-bni, my husband and my son. And then he says, V'ya'ikar k'perish Rashi. But Rashi's right. No, he's not. You're right. Okay. V'gam asa l'rabos ez Rivka lomar k'sheti yehi shkula mibonea harehi chashuva k'mesa. And it's coming to include Rivka to say that when she loses her son, it's as if she will have died. Okay? Yes.
When Adam and Chava ate from the, when God says to them, when if you eat from the Eitadas, you're gonna die. And the explanation is they're gonna become mortal and they will then die and not live forever.
Uh-huh.
So why couldn't this be the same thing? That whatever virtues, that whatever positive virtues that Esav got from Yaakov, whatever good, if he kills him on that day, they will he will as if die also. He will only be abandoned.
It's certainly open for that interpretation. You're getting into homiletics and you're getting into drash, which is, you know, certainly open for that. Rashi takes it literally, that when one dies, the other one will literally die. It's going to be a death which will be followed by a burial. That's the way Rashi takes it. Is what you're saying possible? Absolutely, it's possible. And I think that there's what to be learned from that as well. That if you kill somebody, you know, in a sense, you've lost a little bit of who you are as a human being if you take somebody's life. Certainly if it's done on purpose. Accidents are a different story. Okay, so I think that there's a lot of merit to what you're saying. But that's not the approach which they're taking. They're talking literally that it's talking about people dying. And that, of course, leads into another Gemara, but this time a Yerushalmi, and an entirely different Midrash, which paints a different story than the one that I've been painting up until now. Okay? Whom did Rivka love? Not to say that she didn't love Esav. Okay? He was born from her, she loved her. But whom did... The Torah tells us that Rivka had feelings of love for. Yeah. So there's two times that where the word love is attached to Rivka and somebody else. Number 13... When Yitzchak first meets Rivka, he brings her to the tent of Sarah Imo, his mother Sarah, who of course had died 3 years earlier. Vayikach es Rivka, he takes Rivka, vatihilo liisha, and she became his wife, vayahaveh, and he loved her. Okay, so the word love is connecting Yitzchak and Rivka at the time of their marriage. Number 14, Vayahav Yitzchak es Esav Kitzayid Befiv. When we are told shortly after the birth of Esav and Yaakov, they grow up a little bit. We are told that Yitzchak loved Esav because he hunted for his mouth. In other words, he fed his father. V'Rivka Oheves es Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Does it mean she didn't love Yaakov? Does it mean that she didn't love Esav? Does it mean that Yitzchak didn't love Yaakov? No, it means that they each played favorites, which is not a very good lesson in parenting, but it is what they did. And Rivka is obviously has more special feelings for Yaakov. And this, of course, supports the idea that what Rivka was saying is, Lama Ishkal Gam Shnechem Yom Echad, why should I lose both of you on the same day? That it's referring to losing her husband, followed by her son. Frankly, at the time that Rivka is saying this, Esav is married, has kids, and Yaakov is not married and has no family. So if Esav goes ahead and kills Yaakov, let's assume for a second that's what takes place, who's gonna redeem Yaakov's murder? Nobody. He doesn't have any family who would back him up. So Rivka perhaps is saying, I'm going to lose my husband and my son, Yaakov, on the same day. Where's my proof? So I have a few of them. The first one is these two passages in the Yerushalmi. And they're basically the same thing, so we'll just look at the first one. And that is Yerushalmi Maseches Ksubos. Okay, where it says, look at the first line, starting on the third to last word. It says, Barishona Gazru Shmad B'Yehuda. Okay, this is referring to the Romans made a decree that they would destroy the area of Judea. We have a tradition that Rome were descendants of Esav. So why would Rome create a decree against Judea to get Yehuda back for something that he did to the ancestor of Rome? What does the Gemara say? This is the Yerushalmi again. Shekein mesores lahem avosam sheYehuda haragas Esav. Dechsev yarcha ba'oref avecha. They had a tradition from their fathers that Yehuda, the son of Yaakov, killed Esav, as it says, your hand is on the back of the neck of your enemy. The oref is this part of the neck, behind the neck, the nape. Thank you. Good word. And that is where Yehuda, and that was a blessing, the blessing which Yaakov gives Yehuda in the last parsha of Bereishis and Vayechi, before he dies, in the brachos, and the blessings that he gives to his sons. So he says, Yehuda tayeducha achecha, yarcha ba'oref aivecha, that your hand is on the nape of the neck of your enemy. So what's that referring to?
So there's a midrash in Tehillim, and it's recorded also by the Yalkut Shimoni, which quotes the pasuk which I gave you, number 17 from Shmuel Beis, Voivai Katali Oref Misanai Vasmi Sein. Okay, it talks about the enemy and the neck and of my enemy. What's it referring to? So the midrash says, Midrash Tehillim, number 18. Pasuk ze midaber b'Yehuda. This pasuk from Shmuel refers to Yehuda, the son of Yaakov. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Misaris Agada, there was a tradition that Yehuda harag es Esav. That Yehuda, son of Yaakov, killed his uncle Esav. Emosai, when Bisha'a Shemes Yitzchak Avinu, at the time when Yitzchak died. Halach Esav Yaakov achal shvatim l'kboroso. So remember we saw the pasuk that tells us that Yaakov and Esav buried their father Yitzchak. Who accompanied them to the funeral? Well, Yaakov had all of his sons in the land of Canaan. That's what we read in the last parsha. So they came to bury their grandfather. Shenemar v'yikberu oso Esav Yaakov banav, that Esav and Yaakov, his sons, buried him. V'hayu kulam be'maras ha-machpelah, they were all in the cave of Machpelah. Yoshvin ubochin, they were sitting and they were crying. V'hashvatim omdin v'chokim kavod li'Yaakov, and the Shvatim, the sons of Yaakov, they stand up to give respect to their father. V'yotzein chutz la'mi'ara, they want to give him a moment, or two or three, however much he needs, and they go outside of the cave. Kidei shelo yehi Yaakov bocheh u'misvazel lefnehem, so that Yaakov should not be sitting there crying and embarrassed. Yaakov's going to lose it. He's going to lose control. His father died, and he is going to cry over his father's grave. Hishchil Esav atzmo v'nichnas l'me'ara. Esav snuck around and entered the cave. V'yamar, and he said, Achshav ani hargo l'achar shemes avi. Now I'm going to kill him because it is now after my father's death. Esav carried the grudge till his father's dying day, saying, I said, when my father dies, I will kill my brother. Guess what? My father's dead. I'm going to kill my brother. But what happened was, the other side of what Rivka had been concerned about, things had changed for Yaakov now. Who does Yaakov have with him? All of his kids. His kids are present, and they are going to look out for their dad if they can. Shenamar, right? That's the Midrash continuing, finishing what Esav said he was going to do. Nistakel Yehuda. Yehuda turned and looked. Vira'a, and he saw she'esav nichnas acharav. He saw that Esav was sneaking in behind him. V'yamar, and Yehuda said, Miyad, hu oreglav la'av of him. He's going to kill my father. Miyad hishchil v'tzavhu be'asmo. So he too snuck in behind Esav, v'nichnas, and he entered. V'nimtza, and he found that what's going on? Esav, shayam avakesh la'arogis Yaakov. Esav is standing there, and he's about to kill Yaakov. Miyad amad Yehuda v'harag v'hargo me'acharav. Yehuda stood up and he killed Esav from behind. V'lama lo argo mineged panav. Why did he not kill him from in front? Face him like a man. L'fi shehaya klester panav dome le'aviv. Because Esav, his face, remember Yaakov and Esav were twins. Whether you want to say they're maternal or fraternal twins, we can have that debate. The point is that they shared the same genetic makeup and they looked very similar to one another. And he didn't want to kill from the front somebody who looks like his father. And therefore, he, out of respect, he killed him from behind. And that's what his father, Yaakov, later blessed him and said, that your hand is on the nape of your enemy because you killed him from behind and you saved my life. Now let's go back to our first source. Vayigva Yitzchak vayamas vayeasef el amav zokenu sivayamim
Vayikru Esav Esav Yaakov Banav. Esav's last appearance takes place over here at this point in the Torah, I will argue, because Esav isn't alive anymore in the Torah, following this line of reasoning. You could say you like the other one better, even if it's a little strange in terms of the way Hushin had been done and all that. If he killed Esav at Yaakov's funeral, does it matter which one happened? It doesn't matter, because Esav's role in the life and times of Yaakov and his children ends up anymore after the burial of Yitzchak becomes irrelevant, immaterial, non-admissible in court, and all that. Okay, so in the scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. But two more points, and with this I'll conclude. When Yishmael dies at the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah, we're told Yishmael died, and then we're told about his lineage and his family tree. We're last told about Esav at the end of last week's Parsha, at the end of Perek Lamed Hei, chapter 35, and the very next Perek tells us Esav's family tree. So I'd like to make a parallel, and I think it's a fair one to make, between Yishmael's death, followed by his family tree, and Esav's last appearance in the Chumash, followed by his family tree. So that I think is a good enough suggestion to support the second approach, which I shared with you, of when Esav died. Again, if it's even important. But more importantly, I think, and this is why I started with the question about which one are you more familiar with, and again, you gotta let me know what your grandchildren or great-grandchildren say, because I'm willing to say none of them have heard of the second approach, and if any of them have heard of any approach, they've heard of the one with the head rolling. Okay? Which one, moral lesson-wise, is a better one to teach children? Assuming that we're not going to be hiding things from them. Obviously, it's better, in my opinion, to teach them both, and then have a discussion about it, which one is better. But if we're going to pick one, I feel it's better to teach the second one that we explored. Because both end up with somebody killing Esav. But, you know, when the Torah tells us, many shuls have it on the front, you have the Ten Commandments, and the first one in the second column is Lo Tirsach, which means, no, it doesn't mean don't kill. It means don't murder. Don't premeditate murder. That's what's wrong. Talk something out. You know, Jackie Mason has a great line about how every Jew I know almost killed somebody. If he said one more word, he'd be dead today. What's that word? Nobody knows. Okay, but you can't. Murder is not allowed. Killing, sometimes it's allowed. In war, obviously, self-defense. If somebody comes into your house, there's a halacha. Baba Machtera, somebody sneaks into your house. There's no question. You entered my domain. I'm allowed to kill you. There's no question about it. The Torah says it very clearly. What's the difference between the two cases? In the first example that we had, Hushim is saying, what's going on? Yaakov needs to be buried. Esav's in the way. Boom! Ridiculous! There's no justification for that murder whatsoever. You can't do that. Whereas the one with Yehuda defending his father, defense, there's every justification in the world for that. And that's something which, as exciting as a head rolling is, it's totally wrong. And to teach that to children, as cool as it, Ace is such a bad guy, and he got his just desserts. But he didn't deserve to die for stopping a funeral. Show him the deed, he'll walk away. If Yaakov is actually dead at that point in time, Ace has nothing against Yaakov's kids. He wanted to kill Yaakov. Yaakov's dead, alright, what am I going to do? He's dead. But in the other case, Yaakov's still alive. Ace wants to make good on his promise, and he's absolutely wrong. And if Yehuda kills him at that point in time, Yehuda is absolutely justified. And I think that is the more important and compelling lesson to teach kids. I'll just conclude with one more thought. Yes, sir?
But Yaakov died in Mitzrayim.
Yes, Yaakov died in Mitzrayim. But that's why there are two different midrashim. One is that Esav died at Yitzchak's funeral after Yaakov and Esav together buried their father. And the other one is that Esav died at Yaakov's funeral when Yaakov was already dead. Yeah, but that's obviously they conflict. Which one is correct? I don't know. Does anybody here know? I would venture to say we don't know. But if we're going to teach one in order to talk about when Esav died, we have to talk about the moral lesson which comes from the story. And that's what I'm arguing, that I think that the moral lesson of the second one, the self-defense, is a better lesson. There is another midrash, which I just thought of as I was saying this, which talks about the villains throughout history arguing over who is a smarter, who has a smarter plan in terms of how to kill the Jewish people. So Cain and Hevel. So Cain says, I'm going to kill Hevel and that's it. So the next villain, Esav, says, you dummy, you had to wait until Adam and Chava can't procreate anymore, because after Hevel's dead, they have another child in the image of Hevel. Okay? So Esav comes along and says, I'm going to be smarter than that. I'm going to wait until my parents can't procreate anymore, and that's when I'm going to kill my brother. But they say, the next villain says, you dummy, you waited too long, because Yaakov already had children. You gotta kill the children. And that's Paro's approach. He tries to kill the children. And Haman's approach is, you wait too long by only killing the children, well, they're going to still have more kids. You got to kill all of them. And he doesn't approach. So, anyway, the Midrash keeps on going, showing how all the enemies, with all their plans, they can't, ultimately, in the end, none of them win because they're still here, as devastating as they can possibly be. None of them have succeeded thus far. Okay, anyway, that's just a different thought and a different Midrash and a topic of a different discussion. But the main idea that I wanted to bring out tonight was that if we're going to teach the lesson, it is that the Jewish person is certainly allowed to defend oneself. In some cases, offense is justified, but I don't think that Hushim was in the right if his story is the true one, and that it's important for us to know who we are, what we stand for, and to look out for one another, certainly as Yehuda did for his father Yaakov in the version that says that he killed Esav at Yitzchak's funeral. Yes,